The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to think if we criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition. Well,
on the earth. One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live. Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host... Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome. It is Wednesday, February 1st, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here for our show. We're so happy you could be here on this Hemp Hump Day, Hemp Day, however you want to say it. First day of February, and we've got a great show for you today. Joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is our senior news editor, Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Russ. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm just getting excited about the whole trip to L.A. Been corresponding. Danny Danko sent in a new promo ad that we'll be playing tonight for the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, getting all the passes taken care of. It's becoming real.
Yeah, and a lot of work. I've been seeing all your work done on the email, so thank you so much for putting so much effort into getting us all down there.
Oh, you bet. We're going to have some raffles going on there, and I've got this idea of how we can have 12 raffles over the 2 days.
Basically, oh, my gosh.
12 chances to win things like these NSL Keef boxes. I don't know if you can see the little glass bottom screen, you know, Keef boxes made by Adam Hand. We're going to give some of those away. We're going to give away some of these normal mug jars. I don't know if you can see that on the camera there, the normal mug jar. That's really nice. We'll be giving away Rick Steves hemp backpacks, two of these. $2,000 worth of normal gear that we've got to give away the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. So check that out February 11th and 12th. We'll be streaming live here at live.normal.org. Carrie is our senior news editor, as mentioned earlier, and she's got the hemp headlines for us. So what's in the news today?
I'm sorry, Russ. I just keep laughing because our listeners that know you so well, I just wanted to let them all know that the raffle and everything is all done on a huge data sheet. Everything is like completely pinned down to the time. It's great. Anyway, good job, Russ.
Thank you.
So today on the hemp headlines, we're going to go to Fort Collins. We've been following the adventure of the dispensaries there, the banned, not banned. We're going to give you an update on that. Also, we've been reporting a lot about the racism inherent in the New York City stop and frisk arrests for marijuana. We're going to go over the 2011 statistics coming out of that big city. But first up, we're going to talk about an MJ marijuana group that has offended some veterans. Plus, I think you have an FBI and chainsaw story.
Yeah, you know, we tell a lot of these stories about drug raids gone awry. And today's takes the cake, a woman whose house was chainsawed into by the FBI. So we'll talk about that in our hemp headlines. Also, Dr. Mitch Earlywine coming up later on the show today, taking your live questions via chat and call in. And in the Radical Rant, we're going to take a look at pharmaceutical company lobbying and how it's keeping us down. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. But when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proof containers. From smell-proof vacuum bags to smell-proof backpacks and duffel bags, all the way to smell-proof digital safes, stealth-products.com has you covered. Stealth-products.com brings you safe, secure, odorless layers of protection with activated carbon fiber. Backpacks and duffel bags are simple black so as not to attract attention with a logo or a flashy design. Now, nothing is perfectly odor-controlled from the detection of drug dogs, but with proper vigilance, containers from stealth-products.com will help you avoid nosy humans.
You're now listening to LFPs.
Stealth-products.com. Stealth-products.com. Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. In my job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. Weedmaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of Normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. Weedmaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit Weedmaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network. Inhaling deeply all the sacred smoke.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
A pro-marijuana group has offended the nation's largest group of combat veterans by using the group's modified logo on their website, Facebook page, and on t-shirts, hats, and other marijuana-related items. The group based in Milwaukee is called Veterans for Weed. They borrowed the logo from the National League of POW/MIA families that show a silhouette of a soldier and a prison tower. The group has altered the logo to show the soldier smoking a joint. Their website and Facebook page was filling up with complaints asking them to stop using the POW/MIA logo and the VWF acronym, which also represents the Veterans of Foreign Wars. The Veterans for Weed so far have not backed down. A representative for the group identified as Hemp Solo, who is also a Marine veteran, said that they did not intend to offend anyone and apologized to those that they did offend. But the image is not copyrighted, so they say there's no legal reason why they should stop using it. The website had a message posted today that said, "We did not alter the POD or POW flag lightly or because we were high. We take it very seriously." But they did get a cease and desist letter from the legal counsel, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, that said if they wanted to avoid further legal action by the VFW, that Veterans for Weed must immediately cease using VFW on communications, products, and other representation. The letter clearly stated that the VFW is not affiliated with and does not support Veterans for Weed or any of their initiatives. The statement does not agree that the logo, however, is not copyrighted and it is in the public domain, but called terms used on the website highly offensive, such as stoner soldier or semper high. A chairman of the National League of POW/MIA Families said that offenders will usually stop using their logo when asked or when pressured by members of POW/MIA family members. She said that all they can legally do is just ask them to do what is right and responsible. Hemp Solo, in a statement for the Veterans for Weed group, said that the usage of the logo is important to get attention to the issue of vets who are jailed and their lives are ruined because of a little pot. He says that they have also received quite a bit of positive feedback as well, so they like that the logo is stirring up a little conversation. Solo said that when you are in prison because of pot, that you are a POW, a prisoner of weed.
Okay, well, you can decide for yourself whether you find this to be offensive. I personally don't find it necessarily offensive as much as I find it not necessarily a good public relations move. You have to be careful with this kind of iconography, especially when we're dealing with respect for military, for veterans, for those who may have lost their lives in foreign wars. But for those of you who might be getting offended by the idea of stoner soldier or semper high, let's remind you about our veterans who served in Vietnam, who were some of the first to bring back some of that fine marijuana that they were smoking out there, and how many veterans were able to make it through the horrors of combat in Vietnam thanks to their use of marijuana, and how many veterans now coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan could make beneficial use of cannabis. So it's to take offense at this, I think you're missing part of the point of this. And as far as the point being made by the veterans, Veterans for Weed people, you know, mixing up, you know, VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, mixing up that POW flag, you know, put that aside. The point he's making is correct. There are many veterans who are in jail, who are in prison because of their use of cannabis, even from their use of other drugs or addictions that they have suffered from because of, you know, what they've suffered through in wartime. So it is a serious issue. But if you want to be taken seriously for it being a serious issue, you can't hide behind pseudonyms like Hemp Solo and be making mocking kind of jokes about this. If you want to be taken seriously about this, well, take it a little more seriously.
New York City was the first major city to decriminalize small amounts of marijuana possession. What could have been a proud history of progressive and rational cannabis laws has become a history of racism, leading to New York City becoming the world capital of marijuana arrests, with the most people going to jail over small amounts of cannabis. The stop-and-frisk practices that often lead to marijuana arrests are done disproportionately and routinely on blacks and Hispanics in the city. Police ask citizens during these encounters to empty their pockets, then arrest them, not for having the marijuana, but for having it in plain view. Citizens have become outraged about the practice and started protesting the mayor's house and police department this summer. In September, a memorandum from the police commissioner reminded New York City police officers to please follow the letter of the law in marijuana cases and only make arrests if they have it in plain view when they encounter them. The highlight of the policy, coupled with that memo, has led to arrest rates for small amounts of cannabis to drop significantly. But now the data is in for 2011, and we see that New York City has actually increased their arrest rates for low-level marijuana possession last year. The number of low-level marijuana criminals has now risen for the seventh straight year in New York City. The year-end arrest total for cannabis possession in the city was 50,684 people. That is up just a half a percentage point from 2010, but still more arrests than the total amount arrested for the entire 19-year period from 1978 to 1996. Even with the decline after Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly's memo, there was an increase of 6% in marijuana arrests during the first 8 months of last year, offsetting that decline. Once again, marijuana arrests were the largest arrest category in New York City, costing the city about $75 million to pursue those arrested in the already overburdened New York City court system. New York Mayor Bloomberg has faced criticism because the arrests of marijuana criminals under his watch have been a staggering 87% black or Hispanic, and only 10% of those arrested for marijuana crimes have been white, even though U.S. government studies consistently find that white people use marijuana rates at higher than those of minorities. Now, there is a bill in the Senate currently that would decriminalize a small step more by lowering the charge for a small amount of marijuana that is in public view to a violation punishable by only a fine.
Well, it looks like the police in New York City just don't listen to the pronouncements by their police commissioner to, you know, stop this racially biased stop and frisk practice that is being used against cannabis consumers. You know, all talk, no action. For the seventh straight year, arrests rising. Over 50,000 arrests in New York City alone. This has got to stop. Mayor Bloomberg, you were a pot smoker yourself. It's the ultimate hypocrisy that you're continuing to lead this charge against cannabis consumers. The arrest capital of the world.
Now, we've been following the Fort Collins voter-approved dispensary ban. It was back in November when Fort Collins, a town of about 144,000 residents, voted to ban marijuana businesses by 53% of the voters. The fate of 92 medical marijuana businesses in the area were sealed with that election. 34 of those marijuana businesses were dispensaries. The ban goes into effect on Valentine's Day next Tuesday. Many of the Fort Collins marijuana industry members have gone to neighboring towns to set up shop or have just closed their doors. But there is a group of business owners who say they are prepared to stay and fight. They have filed a lawsuit against the city to seek a temporary restraining order on enforcing the ban and ask for a hearing on implementing the ordinance. They are saying that the ordinance violates the Colorado Constitution by impinging on the rights of the business owners, including their right to assemble, their right to property, their right of expression, and their right to participate in the political process. Along with the city of Fort Collins, the suit also names the entire city council members and the city manager as defendants. We will be watching next week as that ban goes into effect or if any new information develops in the story there in Fort Collins.
Yeah, thanks for the update. You know, we hope they're successful in their lawsuit here, but again, these legal waters are so tough to tread when there's the continuing dichotomy of illegal pot smokers at the federal level and legal pot smokers at the state level. We've got to continue to work on ending prohibition completely before we'll get our full rights. All right, a pretty shocking story that I wanted to add into the news today, coming from Boston. CBS Boston reports the FBI chainsaws, that's right, chainsaws through an innocent woman's door in a wrong address drug raid. Fitchburg, Massachusetts, the FBI accidentally raided the wrong apartment last Thursday, cutting through the apartment door of a central Massachusetts woman and her 3-year-old daughter with a chainsaw. Cutting through the door, not her 3-year-old daughter, in a botched effort to seize guns and drugs. No, 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 no. When you send paramilitary urban assault troops into an apartment building to initiate violence with guns and chainsaws, and someone innocent is victimized, that is not called a botched effort. That is called collateral damage. The story continues. Within moments, the chainsaw had cut through most of her door, and someone on the FBI's arrest team kicked the rest of it in. The woman says, quote, "That's when I heard the clicking of a gun and I heard, 'FBI, get down.' So I laid right on down. And then they said, 'Get your dog.' So I got her. And at the same time, I am laying in her urine because she did pee on herself at the same time," end quote. The woman says the agents told her not to move. So, fearing she'd be shot if she did, she stayed put on the floor while her daughter screamed for her in the other room. This woman is lucky her dog wasn't shot. Can you imagine lying in dog piss with an automatic weapon to your head while your toddler screams in terror at the black-masked armored soldiers invading through your chainsawed front door? Mistakes are inevitable in police work. And when that work is an armed raid of a civilian home, mistakes cost the lives of cops, citizens, and pets. This is why this tactic must be an absolute last resort. We cannot accept this mayhem in the name of stopping people from doing drugs when we know this prohibition never stops people from doing drugs, and it creates most of the violence that people are attributing to the drugs in the first place. All right, we're going to end on a little happier note here. People are just abuzz about this video that was on the Women's Entertainment Network. Joan Rivers from her reality TV show. Check this out. Everyone's talking about it.
Look at this.
This is nice and it's quiet.
This place is aching for some weed smoking.
You think we're going to be safe?
Yes, perfect.
Keep your eye out for cops. Okay, all right.
There are little pipes.
I got the pipe.
What is this?
This is Louis the 13th.
So that doctor was cute. He liked you.
Oh, he didn't like me. Nobody likes me. Only men that are interested in my body are morticians.
It smells good.
Give me a pipe. Give me a pipe.
Oh, these are... Okay. Ready now. Suck it in while I light it. Oh, my God.
Whoopsie.
Are you stoned? Wait, is it stoned?
No, I'm not stoned.
You're getting there. Here, hold on. Okay. Oh, wait. Stay calm. Okay, go, go, go. Suck it. Are you not... Suck it in. You're not sucking it in.
Last time someone told me to suck it in the car, it was 40 years ago. I'm not feeling anything yet.
I'm getting the contact.
Oh, God. I'm feeling so relieved.
Ah, there we go. Come to Papa. Jay, you remember the time we played with Jerry? And we played for 3 days straight, taking about a 2-hour break?
Pretty much. Yeah.
You hungry?
I didn't eat anything.
Starving.
I want to eat right now. Let's go. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
What uh-oh?
Oh, it was already on? All right. I can't tell if I'm moving.
I don't think you should drive.
Wait.
I don't think you should drive.
Oh,
you're
what driving. Do we do?
You know what we're going to do?
I've got to eat something.
We're going to call Melissa.
Oh, I don't think that's cool.
Oh, no. She's my daughter. She is such a good girl.
She's so good, but she's not cool.
She's cool.
What's he got over there, Ma?
A lot of ace.
After you tell him, Karen, he won't talk to you for another month.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
What should I play?
Hello?
Hi, honey.
Mom?
Hey, Mel!
Mom?
Who do you think it is?
What are you doing?
Tell her I said Shaka.
Chicago, brother.
If you don't stop laughing, I don't know what you're saying.
You gotta come and get us. We need you.
I don't know what you guys are up to.
I need you.
Lynn has the prettiest hair, Melissa, you've ever seen.
Yes, I know Lynn has nice hair.
And my hair is pretty.
We're going to catch the rest of that video in hour two in Toker Talk Radio. Pretty hilarious, Joan Rivers. And you notice she realizes they shouldn't drive and they called for someone. How responsible. Back after this.
It's 20 after the hour. And we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
On February 11 and 12, the world's premier medical marijuana competition arrives in Los Angeles for the first time ever. That's right. At LA Center Studios in Los Angeles, High Times will once again present the Medical Cannabis Cup. There'll be panels and seminars with leaders of the medical marijuana movement, including doctors, patients, researchers, growers, dispensary owners, activists, and High Times' own cultivation editors Nico Escondido and Danny Danko. And don't miss our Saturday night VIP party featuring performances by Ioto and Seedless. Plus, Wiz Khalifa will be on hand to accept High Times Stoner of the Year. Don't forget our closing night Cannabis Cup Award ceremony, honoring the top indicas, sativas, hybrids, concentrates, and edibles entered by California's legally operating cannabis dispensaries and collectives. Go to MedCanCup.com for all the details. Be there February 11th and 12th at LA Center Studios in Los Angeles. This is Normal Show Live.
I hope you kids learn something today, too, about drugs, which are bad, except for the ones which aren't, like ibuprofen and aspirin. Marijuana is also okay, if it's legally prescribed by a doctor in any of the 13 states where such laws apply. Alaska, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Michigan, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. Time for a road trip! Ha ha ha! Don't you judge me. Half of you are high right now.
Give me the weed. That's what I need. When I smoke it, satisfaction guaranteed.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. This year, the Drug Czar's Office has a $60 million budget for advertising their Reefer Madness propaganda. We here at Normal don't have that kind of money, but we've got two weapons for fighting back. Your donations and the truth. Please, make a donation to Normal so we can continue to expand this podcast and our other media campaigns. Even a donation of $4.20 can help. Visit us on the web at norml.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L. Thank you for caring and sharing.
Give me the weed, that's what I need. When I smoke it, satisfaction.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
All right, time for us to get Irie. We welcome Kyle back to the show, a.k.a. NorCal Perps. How you doing?
Not too bad. How you doing today, Russ?
We're doing good. We're looking forward to driving down the I-5 corridor. And, you know, Carrie and I are headed down there and we're thinking, you know, Portland to L.A. is a long trip. We ought to drive just to San Francisco area and crash for the night on Monday. Any ideas?
Yeah, it is a long trip. I can tell you from making it up there, just going to Washington to Hempfest and stopping in Portland.
Yeah.
It's definitely a long trip. So, yeah, I would recommend making a stop around the Bay Area somewhere.
All right. If we can make that happen, we'll let you know and get the night to hang out with you.
Yeah, I'm sure me and Rolla J can hop in the car together and come out and go see you guys.
That'll be awesome. All right, well, we got Irie Wednesday music today, and I love what you've picked for today because I've wanted to hear this whole thing. So tell people about it.
Well, with the Cannabis Cup just around the corner, I figured there is no better way than to play the theme song for Danny Dako's show, Free Weed. So here it is with Win Strong and DJ Jacques. Let's see. Let me go. Coming from SoCal. Let's see. I'm sorry. Getting a little mixed up here. 2007, they emerged in the spotlight with their album Eye of the Storm. And since then, he has gone on to appear with numerous big names, such as Warren G, Snoop Dogg, Wu-Tang Clan, Sizzler, and reggae legend Don Carlos. Yeah. And hip-hop fans should know him from his collaboration with Blackalicious, The Gift of Gab. So here is DJ Jacques and Winstrong with Free Weed.
Free Weed. Danny Danko on the normal radio. Free Weed. Oh, yo. Danny Danko come to show you how it goes. You're now tuned into Free Weed from Danny Danko on Normal Radio, presented by High Times Magazine. See me, I say, boom, bang, big respect. See me, I say, Danny Danko, oh, 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 free weed, hey, no, free weed, yeah. Danny Danko on the Normal Radio, oh, weed, oh, thanks and praises to His Majesty for the good herb growing, you know? Yeah.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, PhD.
We are each of us a multitude.
Wow, I'm suddenly feeling wisely fungible.
There isn't the sharp line dividing humans.
Or maybe fungibly wuzzy.
It's a very wuzzy line. It's a very wuzzy line. It's getting wuzzier all the time.
Sometimes it's hard to tell.
We find animals doing things that we, in our arrogance.
Tune in to the Normal Network every weekday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern for our primetime lineup. We begin with an hour of daily Toker Tunes, followed by Normal Show Live and Toker Talk Radio, live from Rolla J Studios in Portland, Oregon. Then, you get 2 hours of recorded podcasts from national and international reformers, followed by our late-night live shows at 11 p.m. Eastern. Then the whole six-hour block repeats twice overnight. It's the Normal Network, your source for the best in marijuana media. It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show, sir.
Pleasure to be here.
All right. We have got so much to talk about today, and we're taking questions through our chat line and our live call-in. If you want to dial in, the phone number here is right there on the screen, 971-533-7111, or you can just get into our chat room at live.normal.org, type your question away, Carrie will get it, and we will get the question to Dr. Mitch. We always like to start off, though, giving Dr. Mitch a chance to let us know what's breaking in the world of cannabis science. So are there any new studies or reports you have for us?
My student Raina and I should have a paper coming out next month basically showing that cannabis users who are asked to take neuropsych tests do better if you say, come on now, do the best you can because this is going to help marijuana policy, than if you just say, do the best you can.
So people that are consuming cannabis do better when they think they're helping the movement?
Exactly. It's a delightful finding, and we were happy that this journal took it.
All right. Well, that's very interesting. Okay. As far as studies I've seen coming across the wires, I wanted to get your comment on a couple of these here. One that's going to be in our normal press release, cannabis is an effective treatment for cancer patients, Israeli study concludes. This was Sheba Medical Center in Tel Aviv in conjunction with the Israeli Cancer Association. What did we find out in that study, and how does that confirm what we've known?
I mean, the bottom line is that this is a whole bunch of physicians in the entire nation of Israel getting behind this notion that not just cannabinoid meds, but actually cannabis can be really helpful for cancer. And they went on to review some things and list some nice findings related to chemotherapy-related nausea, as well as, you know, point out the potential that cannabinoids really have for shrinking tumors. I was delighted to see this.
So it's not just the relief of symptoms of the chemo treatment or the symptoms of the cancer, but actual the cancer itself.
We have some pretty nice data in both animals and petri dishes suggesting that that's really the case.
All right. From the legislative point of view, we've got another issue I wanted to get comment on while we're taking questions. We're gathering up in the chat room right now. Is this state of Hawaii, which, of course, is one of the states that has a medical cannabis law, but it's the only state where it's run by law enforcement and not the health department. And there's a bill in front of their legislature now to remove chronic pain as a sole qualifying condition for medical cannabis, and another bill out there to add PTSD, which I thought was interesting. Paul Armentano tells us that there's probably more research on pain relief than there is for PTSD. What are your thoughts on these moves by the Hawaiian legislature?
I mean, of course, I'd be delighted if they could add PTSD to the list, and actually there's some great VAs there that have become essentially PTSD treatment centers that I think would really benefit from having that as an available approach to the treatment. I'm a little flabbergasted by this relief of chronic pain, and I guess if they're concerned about people abusing that system or claiming to have chronic pain when they don't, I mean, I just find this really inhumane. And if they want to, you know, document that the person is using other approaches, behavioral things, rest, any of the kind of standard pain management techniques that come from a psychological standpoint and don't use other meds, by all means, let's, you know, educate people as much as we can about that. But to actually take away the medicine that works for them is just so counter to every moral thing I can think of that it really hurts my feelings. I hope it doesn't pass.
Yeah, that's just terrible legislation, and we hope all the activists out there in Hawaii and those interested in that legislation would call their legislators there and ask them to you know, not support that bill. You know, they got to kill that bill. It's still in committee at this point. All right, coming to the questions here from the chat. chat room, you know, before we started this segment, we played the ad for the Humor 101 book that you've written, part of that Psych 101 series. And part of the intro talks about your personal experiences in stand-up comedy. Our audience was wanting to know, Dr. Mitch was a stand-up? Can you tell folks about your background there?
Believe it or not, 97, 98, and 99, I spent a lot of time at the Comedy Store in L.A. and the Ice House in Pasadena and just kind of making the rounds, doing jokes about, you know, cannabis, teaching the drug class, and other stuff. And it's funny because I dusted off an old video and watched myself, and I was still pretty funny. So it was fun to watch. But I had a goal, and that was to play the big room at the Comedy Store where I'd actually seen George Carlin on the same stage. And when I got that, I thought, okay, this is, you know, I've reached what I can with this, and now it's time to get back to work repealing marijuana laws.
That is fantastic. All right. Another question that we got from the chat room has to do with some studies we were talking about a day ago or maybe a couple of days ago. And I was bringing up the this was a study, I think it was 2011 or 2010, where they tried to find gender differences in driving by putting pot smokers on a simulator. And they found that the pot smokers did just as well after smoking pot as they did before. We had talked about that study. And as I was describing it, I described how, you know, some of the subjects were getting the 2.9% government swag weed joints, and others were getting the 0% placebo weed joints. And this led to a discussion in the room here and in the chat room about what is a placebo joint? How do you do a placebo of something that you feel immediately? I mean, you'd feel not high. Wouldn't you know it's the placebo?
It hasn't been handled very well in the marijuana literature, but I actually had to struggle with this with alcohol in my dissertation. And so with alcohol, we found that you could pretty much tell people that two beers were fake, but when you got up to four beers, they started getting suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
And with cannabis, I feel like even though it's basically got the THC taken out of that exact same swag weed, I think at least a subset of the sample suggests, oh, this is just bad government weed. But a meaningful proportion may not be fooled. And I actually talked to Anthony Liguori about this because he said their intoxication ratings are lower. Mm-hmm. And so it's clearly a problem when you're trying to compare the effects of real cannabis to this fake cannabis. However, the tacit assumption is that there's some expectancy effect of marijuana on driving, and I think experienced users actually don't expect marijuana to have an impact on driving. So I don't feel like the violation of that placebo expectancy is actually a big deal in studies like this. It is, however, a problem when you're looking at things like pain and nausea and some of the other medicinal effects.
All right. We're taking questions for Dr. Mitch Earlywine. You can call in at 971-533-7111 if you're listening in the live hour, 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern. Or you can get him in on the chat room where we're still getting more questions coming in as we speak. And if you don't get your question answered on today's show, you can get in next week. We do this every Wednesday. Or send an email to 420research@gmail.com, 420research@gmail.com. This next question comes from the NorCal kid who wants to know, are there any studies known to examine the anti-aging effects of cannabis? Anything that ties into studies in the recent years with the telomeres and telomerase, those anti-aging properties?
So there has been something on this, and I just got a link to it, but I haven't read the latest thing about it. There are things loosely related in the Alzheimer's and dementia-related literatures. And cannabidiol is showing some promise with basically delaying dementia as well as some other plants. It turns out curry, people who eat a lot of curry are less likely to get dementia. And the consumption of cannabidiol in particular may have some impact on that. And then we did see that THC tends to decrease the thrashing around at night and some of the general disturbances in the folks who are suffering from Alzheimer's disease, so it at least can sort of make their lives a little easier as far as sleep is concerned. But we haven't seen, I need to take a closer look at that telomere data and see. I don't know if cannabis is the fountain of youth, but I certainly would love to have it be the case.
Yeah. You know, all I can say is Willie Nelson's touring at age 77. So, you know, I don't know if there's any evidence that, you know, that anecdote, you know, N equals one sample, but, you know, works for him.
That's a hell of a data point.
Yeah. All right. We got a question from Yellow Wanna Cake. I like this one. I have read or heard that there are no cannabinoid receptors in the part of the brain that controls breathing and heart rate. So what is it about cannabis that causes an increase in heart rate?
Oh, she's brilliant. This is actually a really complicated biological thing, but it's the parts that would decrease heart rate in the back of the brain that would also decrease respiration that would essentially lead to a lethal dose that cannabinoids don't have an impact on. But there's another path to increasing heart rate where the cannabinoids do seem to be involved, but it's an increase. It's not a decrease that might lead you to, say, go into a coma the way the opiates do.
Hmm. All right. So just kind of there's a backdoor way that cannabis manages to affect the heart rate?
Basically, if you think of the nervous system as having one part that sort of stimulates you and one part that sort of mellows you out, ironically, it doesn't have the impact on the part that mellows you out that could actually lead to a lethal dose.
Okay. Okay. Interesting question. Thanks for that one. Another question coming up here from Canna West. He's pointing out that the GW Pharmaceuticals product Sativex, the whole plant extract, there's a story in Scientific American about that. And, of course, they are forecasting, trials by 2013. Wanting to know if this story is going to break in the U.S. anytime soon and anything you might update us with on that Sativex.
So, I mean, the bottom line is, so this is a spray that goes in your mouth that is absorbed, less rapidly than, say, a vaporized cannabis, but probably a little faster than, say, edibles. And, what a surprise. It's literally plant extract, so it has all the effects that the plant has. I can't help but kind of futz around and say, but damn, why do we got to go through all this effort? We got the plant, So here I have to spray this spray that also, in order to distribute it in the United States, they were going to put this special thing on so you could only spray it every so often, and it was going to control the dose, and it was going to have a GPS monitor, and I mean, it was just getting completely insane. So I'm cautiously optimistic that something like that might open up. I no longer have stock in the company, which may say something about how I feel about it. And it's just not, I think, the most straightforward route for medical cannabis to reach the United States.
Yeah, it does seem kind of like a Rube Goldberg situation here. Instead of just, here's the plant, use it, it's, all right, we got to go all these different steps and studies and go through the FDA and take it apart and put it in a spray and, what a mess. I sure hope we can get this legalized sometime soon. All right. Next question here. We have time for maybe one or two quick ones here. Question from Randy Pinball wants to know, why is it okay for a growing person, developing person under the age of 18 to use Ritalin and other pills, but not cannabis?
Ah, well, here's the deal. Who makes the money? No.
Yeah.
The data on Ritalin in children is not that bad as far as, say, increasing risk for later substance use. Modest impact on total body weight and total body mass, but not, something big and meaningful. And for folks who genuinely have ADHD, they do really seem to benefit. With cannabis, it's not that we have all these data that's terrible so much as we don't have a whole lot of data. There's one study that did show an alteration in the proportion of gray and white matter in the brain. It has failed to replicate. I'm actually worried that other failures to replicate aren't even getting published on that topic. And we do have those Peter Fried data suggesting modest decreases in IQ in daily users of cannabis throughout the teenage years. But what you never hear about is that one of his other findings was that weekly users had a modest increase in IQ.
And so, good news never seems to make it out.
Yeah, so in all honesty, I'm afraid it may be drug company issues, lack of data, and just general stigma around cannabis. That said, I do feel like the data on possibility of dependence increasing the earlier you start is pretty compelling. So those data, I have some data consistent with that and a number of other studies showing that, the earlier you start, the more likely you are to get dependent symptoms. That said, how horrible is cannabis dependence? Well, it does lead to, some horrible withdrawal symptoms like loss of appetite.
Yeah. All right. And with respect to that, Ritalin question, is there any correlation shown in the data in any studies between the prescription and then the rapid increase in the prescription of Ritalin and other ADHD drugs to children and the increase in methamphetamine and amphetamine addiction among adults?
No, as it turns out, Allison Luby has reviewed this literature, and she's at University of North Dakota now. And at least in the published studies, there's nothing to suggest that basically a prescription for Ritalin and regular use in childhood increases probability of substance abuse later in life.
Hmm. Interesting. Those Ritalin drugs are a type of amphetamine, aren't they?
Oh, it's speed. I mean, let's not pretend otherwise.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Dr. Mitch, for joining us here on Wednesdays for our Cannabis Science segment. Again, folks, if you want to get a question into Dr. Mitch, just send it by email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. We'll talk to you next week, Dr. Mitch from Los Angeles.
You guys have a blast.
All right. We'll talk to you again. When we get back, we are going to have a little bit of time for a radical rant. We're going to take a look at some of those big pharma stories and how their lobbying pressure helps to keep marijuana legalization down and stifle medical marijuana research. We're back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
What's up, guys? I'm Rory from Revolution, chilling at the Spring Fest, San Bernardino, California. Chilling at the Normal Live. Want to say what's up and keep it green.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly if I said some silly thing, and that's the reason why.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
How does President Obama go from a 2004 Senate campaign saying, quote, "The war on drugs is an utter failure, and I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws," end quote, to his current 2012 silence on the issue, where he ignored us for the ninth time that the YouTube forum and Citizens Briefing Book and Open for Questions has shown the people to want a discussion on marijuana laws? Why would a man who smoked pot as a teenager, quote, "frequently, that was the point," end quote, and whose mother died from cancer, go from a 2008 campaign promise that he wouldn't be, quote, "using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws," end quote, on medical marijuana, to a 2011 war on medical marijuana states surpassing anything George W. Bush ever attempted? Well, maybe part of the answer is in this story that I found in Huffington Post today. Interesting quote from the story. "There are few industries with as much power in Washington as the pharmaceutical sector. Drug companies have spent $2.3 billion on lobbying, and another $183 million on campaign contributions since 1998, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. The industry also maintains a war chest for advertising and grassroots lobbying aimed at altering public opinion. The ready money serves as a strong deterrent against any legislative proposal that would lower costs for consumers and profits for the drug makers. And again, from Huffington Post, and it's from a series of posts they've got up called Auction 2012. And it goes into detail to explain how pharmaceutical lobbying killed two provisions in the Obama health care plan that would have lowered prescription drug costs for patients. It also explains how Big Pharma influence in 2003 helped kill the ability of Medicare to negotiate in bulk for lower prescription drug prices for seniors and maintaining a ban on the import of lower-cost prescription drugs from Canada. So, when you know that, as in the recent survey at the Berkeley Patient Group showed, two-thirds of patients at this clinic reported substituting marijuana for their prescription drugs with better results and less side effects, and when you know that medical marijuana states have the lowest prices for marijuana, down to about $210 an ounce here in Oregon, you can't help but think that patients growing medicine in their backyard or their closet really can't be that good for Big Pharma's profits. However, as pharmaceutical corporations keep squeezing the dollars out of patients' pockets and into congresspeople's war chests, they may be unintentionally creating more medical marijuana patients. This is, again, from the Huffington Post story. According to a 2010 Kaiser Family Foundation study, drug prescriptions rose by 39%, while drug prices nearly doubled over the last decade. More and more individuals, hard-pressed to pay for medications, are opting to abandon their prescriptions. In 2009, the number of patients who did not fill or pick up prescriptions increased by 23% from the previous year and up 68% from 2006. That's people that are unable to afford their medications, people that are cutting their pills in half, people that are playing dangerous games with their health so that pharmaceutical companies can continue to post record billion-dollar profits quarter after quarter. Now, more people are becoming aware of marijuana's medical utility every day. As those prescriptions become less affordable, more people will clamor for the herbal alternative. More laws will pass, more prohibitions will fall, more people will know the truth about cannabis, and the full utilization of this plant is inevitable. The only question is, how many more people will suffer, and how much longer will it take to finally realize legalization? Well, in 2012, we've got three states that are going for it so far. Pretty strong chances. We've already got on the ballot in Washington, likely to get on the ballot in Colorado, and really strong chances of getting on the ballot in California. This pharmaceutical industry, as a corporation, their only job is to maximize profit for shareholders. The health of their customers does not enter into the equation unless that affects their bottom line. And medical marijuana, an alternative that you can grow yourself, that you can maintain your own health without all the middlemen, without all the markups, without all the barcodes, threatens their very business model, threatens their domination of control over Washington. There are currently over two lobbyists. It's like 2.48, I think it is. 2.4 lobbyists from pharmaceutical industries. 2.4 lobbyists for every congressperson, every senator, every representative, shouted by at least two pharmaceutical lobbyists pushing their way, pushing their agenda. Now, we've also found in other areas very telling examples of this profit motive at work. And I'm going to tell you a story that I reported early last year, that it pretty much crystallizes the profits over people motives of these pharmaceutical companies. It was told by ABC News, and they were talking about a drug called progesterone. Now, progesterone is a pregnancy drug. It helps to deal with late-term or, problem pregnancies. And this is from ABC News. Preventing preterm births preterm births just got 150 times more expensive now that KV Pharmaceuticals has gained exclusive rights to produce a progesterone shot used to prevent premature births in high-risk mothers. Although the shot has been available in unregulated form from specialty compounding pharmacies for years for $10 a pop, the Food and Drug Administration recently granted KV Pharmaceuticals sole rights to produce the drug, which will be marketed as Makena and cost $1,500 per dose. That's right, from $10 a dose to $1,500 a dose, an estimated $30,000 in total per pregnancy. Now, is that the same Food and Drug Administration that we're constantly told is the agency that has to approve medical marijuana? The cannabis that we can grow at home for about $25 an ounce, yet it's priced about $300 an ounce at dispensaries, and we want to let FDA give it over to someone that'll jack the price up even more? Let me continue the ABC story. Though KV Pharmaceuticals plans to offer financial assistance to low-income households in need of the drug, how private health insurance companies and Medicaid will respond to this price spike remains to be seen, leaving many doctors fearing that access to this treatment will become severely limited or interrupted for those currently mid-treatment. Pregnant women, remember? Pregnant women, mid-term, high-risk pregnancy for preterm birth. What about the children indeed? Now, as far as whether or not health insurance will cover it, look, my wife used to work for a major health insurer, and let me answer that question. Hell no. Hell no, they're going to be paying $1,500 a shot for something that costs $10. Now, the FDA laws, according to ABC News, prohibit compounding pharmacies from making FDA-approved products. Doctors will be legally obligated to stop using the cheaper version of the drug. That's right. The doctors who already have the progesterone on the shelf, the non-FDA, non-marked-up Makena-branded product, they won't be allowed to use that. That's right. That has to go to waste and has to be replaced with the $1,500 a shot new drug. Continuing from the ABC story, quote, "I hope I deliver before the new price kicks in," says Davika Ross, age 36, who's been taking the non-branded form of the shot, called 17-hydroxyprogesterone caproate, for the past 11 weeks. Her first child was born about 3 months premature and, after a combined 232 days in the neonatal intensive care unit, died from pulmonary hypertension. When Ross became pregnant again this past fall, she was at high risk for another preterm pregnancy and was placed on the progesterone shot 16 weeks into her pregnancy. She is now almost a month further along than she was when her first child was born, and she has a good chance of delivering full term. Quote, "My insurance pays for the non-branded shots, but I don't know if they would cover it if it cost $1,500 a shot. That doesn't seem fair, especially because not everyone has insurance," end quote, she says. So if it isn't painfully clear why we need to maintain the right to home grow, especially for medical marijuana patients, if this story doesn't show it to you, if the power of the pharmaceutical company's ability to control Congress with over two lobbyists per congressperson, and what was it, $2.3 billion in lobbying since 1998, it is the only bastion we have left, the only check on unchecked corporate power over this plant is to maintain our right to home grow it. In those medical marijuana states that don't have home grow, activists should be fighting for that tooth and nail. In states where they're trying to pass medical marijuana law, you've got to give the patients some right to grow at home. And for all of us, we need to remember as we move forward with legalization and as these bills like 502 aren't allowing home grow, we've got to push for that after their passage. They've got to be amended. We must secure the right to home grow. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us for Cannabis Carry. We'll be back with Hour 2 here in just about 60 seconds. Toker Talk Radio will take your phone calls at 971-533-7111. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is Normal Show Live.
the voice of the Marijuana Nation.